That's all right. Thank you, Senator Hughes. The Senate Education Committee meeting is called to order. Today is Monday, March 15, 2021. The time is 9:02. We're meeting in the State Capitol Room number 205. Senators in attendance are Senator Stevens, Senator Hughes, Senator Begich, and myself, Senator Holland. We have a quorum to conduct business. And thank you to Jeannie, our recording secretary, and Kelsey, our moderator today. As a reminder, please silence your cell phones. We have two items on today's agenda. We will start with Senate Bill 20 relating to out-of-state teacher reciprocity. Senator Stevens, would you like to offer opening remarks and introduce your staff?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Appreciate your hearing Senate Bill 20. It's a teacher certification reciprocity, simply an attempt to help districts solve the teacher shortage they've been facing here in Alaska by trying to balance, on the one hand, setting a high bar for excellence of teachers, and on the other hand, acknowledging the barriers to entry that some folks face. As we know, Mr. Chairman, teaching is a heavily regulated profession with very stringent guidelines, training, and assessment program requirements. This bill is simply an effort to offer a pathway that is clear, reflects the unique needs of Alaska, maintains an awareness of our history and culture, but also to get teachers in good standing coming in from other states, possibly even military spouses, into our classrooms more quickly. I'm really anxious to learn from our districts if this would help them solve some of their teacher shortages. And to that end, I'd like to introduce Tim Lamkin for my staff to explain the bill.
I welcome Senator Machicki to the committee this morning. Good morning. And Mr. Lamkin, once you get set up, if you please state your name and affiliation for the record and begin your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Tim Lamkin, staff of Senator Stevens. I want to thank you for hearing this bill. Before you, Senate Bill 20 aligns with some regulatory suspensions that occurred by emergency order during the past year, and also at the request of some of our superintendents around the state to assist districts in improving the supply of qualified teachers, primarily in the form of relaxing some training requirements, and specifically the 3-credit-hour semester course in Alaska Studies and multi- and cross-cultural studies in our state. It's assumed that if a teacher is in good standing in another state, if they have the basic requirements of a baccalaureate degree, which will remain intact, of course, that they pass the praxis exams and other related assessments for getting a certification in another state, and meanwhile they also complete their background check and their fingerprinting and so forth, all of those things completed, that they should be eligible to legitimately resume teaching in our state as well. And this bill would give them a window of time to complete those Alaska-specific trainings. That is the general summary of the bill, Mr. Chairman. I'd be happy to go into the sectional, if it pleases you.
Please begin.
So before you should be Senate Bill 20, Version A, Alpha. Section 1 relates to AS 1420010, teaching certificates in general being required in order to teach in our state. And it removes the reference to there being a preliminary certificate. And you'll hear that a number of times in the bill, because generally that's what the bill does, is modify, if not indeed eliminate, the preliminary certificate. Section 2, AS 1420015A, relates to out-of-state teaching certificates and removes the reference to there being that preliminary certificate. It also removes a requirement for the out-of-state teachers to have the baccalaureate degree, again, because it's assumed that they've already completed that elsewhere. Section 3, 1420015B, also relates to out-of-state teaching certificates and removes the requirement for passing a competency exam, most typically praxis, and replaces with the requirement to complete the college course within 3 years. Section 4 is 1420015C, also relates to out-of-state teaching certificates and removes the reference to there being a preliminary certificate. Section 5 is AS 1420020B, relates to the requirements of teaching certificates generally, and exempts the out-of-state certificate holders
from having to complete the college course in Alaska Studies or Multi and Cross-Cultural Studies before receiving their Alaska certificates. Section 6 relates to the requirement to complete the college course in Alaska Studies and Multi Cross-Cultural Studies. It allows an out-of-state teacher to receive that certificate more quickly, but to complete those studies within 3 years. Section 7 is AS 1420-020K, relating to the requirement of a variety of trainings, including abuse, flag training, looking after children so that they can have 3 years to complete those trainings. Section 8 repeals 1420-015 D, E, and F, which all relate to the preliminary certificate regarding teaching employment, tenure, and those preliminary certificates being expiring. All of those are repealed because they'd no longer be relevant. That completes the general sectional, Mr. Chairman. I've got some folks lined up, superintendents, the commissioner, that will be happy to go into detail for you as you bring their commentary.
Question from Senator Begich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Tim, just a quick question to be sure I fully understand. The assumption is that holding a valid teacher certificate issued by another state would require you already to have a BA or BS in some area, but how do we know that for sure?
That, Mr. Chairman, through the chair, Senator Begich, there's quite a national movement for conformity in teaching certificate, and I'm not aware of any state, and I'm sure it could be corrected here shortly, but I'm not aware of a state that issues a teaching certificate without that applicant having a baccalaureate degree.
Follow up?
So, Mr. Tim, one of the things that's come up in the past is a bill to allow teachers to teach. It's not this bill, but it's come up before this committee to allow teachers to teach foreign language, for example, without having a teaching certificate. That's come up. I've been opposed to that because I see it as kind of a loosening of the structure for education. And I guess what I'm trying to get at is, where's the protection anywhere in the law for sure then that there's a requirement of a BA or a BS to teach? I just want to be sure I understand, because I get everything else. What you're doing is you're saying we'll give you 3 years to come into compliance with the law. That way we'll get more people involved. But I just want to be sure that we're doing the right thing here.
Through the chair, Senator Begich. I think this is covered in a section of the bill, whereas, you know, in order, if you're trained in Alaska, you have to get that baccalaureate degree, and that this is shifting the preliminary certificates to a full certificate, and they would still have to prove that they've got that baccalaureate. I don't have the section right in front of me, but I'm very confident it's there, and I'll be obliged to defer to the commissioner.
Appreciate that.
Okay. Any other questions from the committee?
Just a brief.
Senator Michiki.
Just curious if these original requirements on Alaska studies came from a previous Senator Stevens bill or not.
Now that I think of it, yes. In fact, Mr. Person, I taught that class for many years at university.
Yeah, I think it predates you, Senator Stevens, because I had to take Alaska studies back in 80.
No, I'm older than you think.
Senator Hughes.
Thank you for bringing this bill forward. I know there's been discussion of this in some other professions as well, and wanting to make sure that the standards in the other states, the bar's not lower, as Senator Begich was just inquiring. But there's other things besides getting a college degree, because there can be other training requirements. We heard about Mississippi actually requires the teacher pass a test to make sure they know how to instruct children in reading. So I'm wondering, it seems like it would be reassuring if DEED or there were a national comparison of the standards and qualifications for teacher certification, so we would know. And because it might be that we would want to say yes for these states but not for these other states, is there anything, any resource where we'd be able to compare what the difference the standards are for the various states? And is that something that the sponsor would think might be necessary? I'll just leave it at that.
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, we have some folks online that can contribute to the conversation with questions such as that, but to give a pretty good picture of the national landscape of what's happening, particularly among other states. And they are lined up to formally testify and give a presentation on Friday on this subject. That should very well address that question.
Okay.
Yeah, and I'll just
follow up.
We're looking in another bill, of course, the reading, the early literacy, and I'm just thinking, you know, bringing, for example, teacher in from Mississippi, we know that they know how to instruct reading. But in another state, even if we are to require, as the early literacy bill would require, I believe, 3 credits in science-based, evidence-based reading instruction, we're bringing in a teacher from another state that maybe doesn't have that education requirement as part of the bachelor's and also doesn't do an exam on that subject like Mississippi. So now we're bringing someone that actually would not be as prepared as we might want. So that's my concern.
Thank you, Senator Hughes. With no more questions from the committee, we can move on to invited testimony. I see Dr. Larry Ledoux. I see his window up there. Dr. Ledoux, are you Superintendent Kodiak Island Borough School District? Are you tuned in?
Thank you. I'm happy to be here this morning. I don't have a formal presentation, but just a few comments if Senator Holland will allow.
Please state your name and affiliation for the record and begin your comments.
My name is Larry Ledoux. I'm the superintendent of the Kodiak Island Borough School District. I thank you for the opportunity to testify. I think that this bill is very, very important. As the committee is aware, teachers are very difficult to find in Alaska. Alaska cannot grow their own in sufficient numbers to supply all of our positions, so we need to look outside to find teachers. In the past, it's been very difficult to do that. Alaska used to enjoy hundreds of teachers that wanted to come to Alaska. When I used to attend job fairs in Anchorage a number of years ago, we would have 1,200 candidates lined up during the job fairs. Now it seems like we have more administrators looking for teachers than there are teacher candidates. And so we need to look outside. It's a very competitive market. Our salaries are not as high as they used to be compared to other states. And we need to make it easy for quality staff members to come into our system. This year, because of the waiving of a number of requirements based on the emergency declaration, this made it very easy for us to fill our openings with quality teachers. They've been able to waive everything from the praxis scores, the 3 semester hours in Alaska studies and Alaska multicultural education. The certification office has been exemplary in helping us certify our teachers. I can't tell you how much we appreciate all that they've done. Many of our teachers that we hire in Kodiak are military spouses, and because of the transfer season, they come in throughout the summer, and anything that holds up certification of these teachers makes it very difficult for us to have teachers in front of kids on the first day of school. We believe as a district that we can provide the support necessary to help these teachers successfully complete their job responsibilities. I hope that this bill passes. I think that will help us fill positions, and I think it will attract more teachers who sometimes go elsewhere because of they don't want to go through of all of the immediate steps necessary to be fully certified, especially since they're taking the risk personally and professionally from their point of view to come to Alaska. So I appreciate the bill. I'm very supportive. I think it will help us fill our positions.
Thank you, Dr. Ledoux. There's a question from Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Dr. Ledoux. I appreciate your comments. Senator Hughes has brought up the issue of an applicants from other states who may not be as qualified as they should be, but certainly when you receive those applications, you scrutinize them carefully, and I would assume would not hire someone that was not adequately trained in any event. Would you comment on that?
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, we would never hire a teacher, especially in elementary areas, that did not have sufficient credentials in reading. That's critical. I even want more credentials in that area. Generally, we have found that elementary teachers do have the reading background and the experience. If we were unable to ascertain that, we would not hire them or consider hiring them in spite of this bill.
Thank you, Dr. Ledoux.
Thank you, Dr. Ledoux. With no other questions before the committee, we will move on to the next invited testimony, Dr. Dina Bishop, Superintendent, Anchorage School District. Dr. Bishop, can you hear us?
Yes, thank you.
Please state your name and affiliation for the record and begin your comments. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Chair Holland. My name is Dina Bishop, and I am the superintendent of the Anchorage School District. Senate Ed, as well as Chair, thank you for allowing me to speak today. And I just have a few words as well. Please know that Senate Bill 20 allows potential applicants to consider teaching in Alaska at a higher rate, as Dr. Ledoux shared. Simply stated, the bill allows the flexibility needed at just the right time in our state. I'm going to share a few thoughts with you. First, many alternative certificate programs in the lower 48 do not require a student teaching experience, but rather a blended approach to gaining certification. This bill would allow for new hires to move to the professional certificate, whereas they are not able to presently do so due to the student teaching requirement of the state. And often they may not even choose Alaska because of that provision. Second, more educators are entering this profession now as a second career more than ever. While my career did not start this way, second career educators are highly cherished in the districts for which I've worked. I personally have high regards for them. I believe they have so much more to offer our students, especially when we consider we are preparing students for the real world or success in life. Many of our second career educators have worked in the private sector, which simply adds value to our classrooms. These second career educators are more inclined to enter into an alternative certificate program. And then third, Anchorage speaking, we have 8 immersion programs, and out-of-country educators that we use for our immersion programs often do not participate in the traditional student teaching roles that we have here in the U.S. and especially in our state. This bill would allow for the out-of-country candidates to move to the professional certification as well, whereas they are not able to do so now due to that student teaching requirement. And finally, ASD, similar to Kodiak, has about 7% of our teachers and other certificated staff coming from military families, their military spouses. And although I believe, and we like to believe, that the environment and the fishing and the hunting and the wonderful family life attracts people, so does work. And so in order to really keep our military spouses employed, having a more flexible certificate path is always valued in their transfers. So in summary, Senate Bill allows the time and flexibility needed to transition to Alaska. Senate Bill continues to hold those standards that I've heard you talk about, but yet allows more time to complete the requirements. Thank you for hearing my testimony, and I welcome any questions that you might have.
Question from Senator Machiki.
Thank you, Dr. Bishop. Do you have any teachers in the Anchorage School District that do not have a baccalaureate degree?
Yes, we do. And primarily, they teach in our career and technical education. The state has what's called the Type M certificate. But again, it's not driven by anyone wanting to go get the certificate. Districts have to specifically request a Type M certificate for people that they would like to teach in particular courses. And again, I think that holds the standards that we're keeping districts accountable, like Dr. Ledoux shared, that we hire who we know will do the best job and get the best outcomes. We have hundreds of type M certificated people that do not have a baccalaureate degree.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Bishop. With no other questions before the committee, thank you for your comments. Now we'll move on to the next invited testimony, Commissioner of Alaska Department of Education and Early Development, Dr. Michael Johnson. Good morning, Dr. Johnson. Can you hear me?
I can, and is my audio okay?
You sound great. Please state your name and your affiliation for the record and begin your comments.
Great. Good morning. For the record, my name is Michael Johnson, and I'm the Commissioner for the Department of Education and Early Development for Alaska students. Thank you for the opportunity to be here to speak about Senate Bill 20 with my esteemed colleagues here. And this is regarding recognition of out-of-state teachers for certification. Once again, I want to thank Senator Stevens and the rest of the committee for focusing legislation on the shared priority of the Alaska Education Challenge. Priority number four is to prepare, attract, and retain effective education professionals. SB 20 would improve our trajectory toward this priority. Though we will continue working to prepare more lifelong Alaskans to become certified teachers, we recognize that the current challenge to recruit enough teachers requires us to invite safe and skilled educators from across our great country. Many of our current teachers evidence the dedication and effectiveness that students need. These educators chose to move here, learn from our fellow Alaskans, respect our cultures, and care for Alaska students. This past year has given us an opportunity to appreciate, like never before, teachers who work tirelessly for their students, even when faced with a global crisis. We need teachers for our students. I appreciate this committee's attention to the issue. Finally, Sandra Meredith, our manager of certification, is here also, who can answer any specific questions about our current certification statutes and regulations. And then some of your previous questions, I know Tiffany and Cassidy from Education Commission of the States has the perspective from across the country in a way that we don't at the department. And so I know they'll be very effective in helping the committee think through how this compares to other state. So thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Johnson. A question from Senator Begich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, why do we have the baccalaureate requirement now in law for the higher education, you know, for the teachers who might want to teach here? Why do we have it here now? Why not just eliminate it entirely? Given I just heard 300 or more people teaching in Anchorage School District don't have a BA.
So through the chair, Senator Begich, in terms of why it's in statute, what the specific conversation was when that was placed there, I don't know. I wasn't around then, but I think it's easy to say that because teaching increasingly requires training at a higher level than high school. In other words, you go into college, you obtain a higher level of skill and understanding of what it means to be a classroom teacher. So I think that's like many other industries, that post-secondary training is essential for the work. However, I would also add increasingly that there's many pathways to achieve those skills and that preparation that may have not been available in the traditional higher ed setting 15, 20, 30 years ago. So I think, you know, the broad answer is it's a matter of training and skills. Students are complex, and it requires a special kind of training to meet their needs.
Thank you, Commissioner Johnson. A question from Senator Machicki.
Yeah, thank you, Commissioner. So right now I pulled out the statute book. I think the subject matter expert limited teaching certificate is what you're referring to, 1420022, and that requires could require a baccalaureate or at least 5 years experience in the subject matter that the person will be teaching. Is that what Is that the certificate that most are using that do not have a BA or BS?
Through the chair, Senator Maticki, I don't have it in front of me, but I think you're speaking of the Type M certificate, and so the answer to that would be yes. I would again point to Sandra Meredith, who is our certification manager, who, like no other person in our state, knows our regulations, the statutes and regulations associated with all the different kinds of certificates that we offer, and including, you know, what we waived during the pandemic. But I think the short answer to your question is yes, that's a Type M certificate.
Thank you, Commissioner Johnson. Is there a follow-up on that?
I can wait. I
believe if there are no more questions from the committee, we can check and see if Sandra Meredith is tuned in. I believe she's on the phone. Sandra Meredith, are you out there?
Yes, I am.
Would you like to state your name and affiliation for the record, and did you have any comments on what's been discussed?
Absolutely. For the record, my name is Sandra Meredith. I am the administrator for the teacher certification section of the Department of Education. Through the chair, I do have a comment or clarification on the Type M question of where that falls in regulations, and that is actually a separate section from the one that was mentioned by
Senator Maticki. Yeah.
That particular statute that was referred to as a subject matter expert, that allows individuals that have bachelor's degrees but have not completed their teacher preparation program to be licensed in the state. Type M is follows that. I don't have the number right next to me, but that's further along in the statutes that the Type M appears.
Thank you, Ms. Meredith. Did you have any other follow-up question from Senator Maticki?
So this is a great bill, just like all of Senator Stevens' bills, or at least most of them.
Thank you.
My only question is related to it looks like you have an avenue. I mean, producing evidence of a baccalaureate is easy, right? I mean, that I understand why the other areas are removed on the other, you know, the Alaska studies and the cross-cultural. That makes sense. Allows you to put a teacher to work right away. It seems like you have other avenues without dropping the bar on every teacher, without requiring a BA. So I'm curious why that's actually in the bill.
Is there someone in particular you'd like to direct that to? Or is there anyone so far who's spoken who would like to comment on that? Hearing none.
This is Sandra Meredith. I could make a comment about that.
Please.
Again, for the record, this is Sandra Meredith, administrator certification, and through the chair, Senator Maticki. One of the things that we do at certification, when it comes to the this particular pathway that's currently in existence, that the bill will change slightly, is when we look at certifications from other states, we're using the NASDEC agreement to determine whether or not it's a regular certificate that's been established by NASDEC. We're looking to see that the certificate that's being presented represents a certificate that shows that the person has completed a teacher preparation program and also has a bachelor's degree as the minimum requirement. So that is something that we do in regards to this particular statute in the moment. And that would be something that I would assume that the bill sponsor would want to be continued in regards to the changes, that we would still be looking at the certificate to make sure that it was a regular certificate issued by the state that is coming from.
Thank you, Ms. Meredith. Question from Senator Begich.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, Ms. Meredith, this is essentially removing a redundancy. Is that what you just said, I think?
Through Through the chair, that would be correct, Senator Baggage. As part of our processes, we would be looking to the state where it was issued to make sure that the certificate represented what I mentioned before.
Follow up
from Senator Baggage.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman. And the acronym you use, that's the Accrediting Association, is that right?
Yes, it's a national association my peers as licensing managers across the nation are part of, and we have an agreement that's also in our statute that connects us to that agency.
Mr. Chairman.
Another question from Senator Baggage.
Just a comment. That satisfies my concern.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Baggage. Another question from Senator Machicki.
Yeah, it doesn't quite get me there. I don't see anywhere else in the code, other than the subject matter expert, reading that more carefully, where a baccalaureate is required. Are we thinking about dropping the requirements for a BA or VS for a teacher certificate? Because if not, I don't necessarily understand the value of removing that section that requires that level of education. Just curious, are we thinking about in certain subjects other than the subject matter, well, I'm sorry, the type M, where we're having a difficult enough time landing educators in the state of Alaska that someone with an AA might be a target for employment in the future?
Ms. Meredith, did you have any response to that?
Yes, through the chair. Again, this is Sondra Meredith for the record from Department of Education. Senator Machicki, the predominance of our certifications are issued under 14-2020. And if you look carefully at Section B, subsection B of that provision, you'll see that a bachelor's degree is a minimum requirement. That is pretty much the overarching statutes for all other certificates, save for the subject matter experts and the out of state reciprocity language that's separate from that section. Everything else falls under that provision that requires the bachelor's.
Thank you, Ms. Meredith. Mr. Lamkin, I think did you have a comment about this? It started to mention something a little while ago.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. No, they've covered it.
It's been addressed. I also see that we have Cassidy Francis on, let me see if she's on the screen or online, and Tiffany McDowell. Those were both available to answer questions. I wanted to give either of them an opportunity if they heard anything they wanted to provide any insight on. Did you have any comments? I see Cassidy Francis. Is it Francis or Francis?
Hi, Mr. Chair. Thanks for having us. It's Francis.
Oh, Francis. Okay, there's an extra
vowel
in there, I think, with my copy. But if you'd please state your name and your affiliation for the record. And did you have any comments to contribute to the discussion today?
My name is Cassidy Francis, policy researcher with the Education Commission of the States. And I think the only thing I would add here is that generally experience is the biggest indicator of teacher effectiveness. And so a lot of policymakers have used that as justification for providing reciprocity if these out-of-state teachers have experience teaching in their other state.
And I saw Tiffany McDowell up on the screen for a short bit of time. Ms. McDowell, if you want to state your name and your affiliation for the record, if you had any comments on SB 20.
Gladly. Thank you for having us, Senators, and I appreciate your time this morning. My name is Tiffany McDowell. I'm a senior policy analyst with Education Commission of the States. We're looking forward to presenting to you this Friday with a more formal analysis of the national landscape on statute related to reciprocity. No additional comments this morning. Just wanted to note for the group that on Friday we will also speak to the idea of how other states consider bachelor's degrees, baccalaureate degrees within the licensing process. So we'll be glad to bring you additional details on that topic.
We do have SB 20 scheduled for additional invited and public testimony on Friday, March 19th. Or comment from Tim Lampkin?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Tim Lampkin, staff to Senator Stevens. Just wanted to kind of touch upon Senator Majicki's concerns and perhaps also Senator Begich's here. I think the key word that I would like to remind the committee here is reciprocity. What the target here is if a teacher is in good standing in a particular subject matter with the respective certificate, that respective certificate would be reciprocal received in Alaska. And I don't believe that Senator Stevens, or we certainly don't intend to lower the bar with regard to a baccalaureate or a degree, and we'll certainly be taking a look at that to make sure we're not doing that.
Senator Begich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just as a point of clarification, the way I understand this is from what Sandra was mentioning is 1420.020B, subsection B. I don't have the statute in front of me, but that requires a baccalaureate degree. This is simply removing, as I asked her, a redundancy. Once I understood that, it made sense to me. There was a redundancy in the law because if you're already examining these certificates through reciprocity and the accreditation process, then you would already have met that requirement, and it's just simply redundant. I think, you know, we sometimes react to the removal of statements or phrases in a statute that's often done by our alleged legal to clean up a statute or clean up a mess in a prior statute. I don't know if this is why that's there, but that once she explained that to me, which I think would be helpful in any explanation of the bill in the future, it makes it clear to me that that's a redundancy and that we're not lowering the standard. I'm going to look at 020B to make sure that that's the case, but that seems to me to be what folks are saying. I have a deeper concern, which I'll bring up with the superintendent of my school district to find out more about these hundreds of M certificates to find out more about that, but this is not the time nor the place for it.
Thank you, Senator Begich. Senator Majicki?
Yeah, just a brief. I see the statement in 020, and I agree that it has a requirement, but what this seems to say in this bill is unless it's a certificate born out of reciprocity, and that's the part that I'm a little bit concerned about, and I'm not going to lose sleep over it. I just like to understand exactly what it seems to point in that direction, kind of trusting the certification of other states, and that's what we've been talking about the whole time. So I don't think that's the goal. Therefore, I'm not sure that needs to be removed. But I'd love to hear, and we don't need to do it today, Mr. Chairman, if others can kind of point us in that direction that it does still satisfy that requirement, I could be fine. But I don't think it's actually redundant. I think it's saying that when you're receiving those other certificates, it still requires a BA or BS unless it's a type M certificate.
Thank you, Senator Majicki. Senator Hughes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to bring up a new topic. This bill is not changing anything in regard to it, but in the opening statements by the sponsor, there was mention that during the time of COVID that there were regulations and things suspended that allowed the hiring of out-of-state teachers in a more streamlined fashion. And my understanding is the fingerprinting is one thing that slowed things down. So I'm just wondering if that is the timing of that is going to be a problem. I'm assuming that teachers are fingerprinted to get their licenses in other states. So are we accepting that and allowing them to come on in and get to work with this bill, or would they have to wait on the fingerprinting process, and what kind of delay would that be?
Mr. Lampkin, did you have a comment?
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, I'm reviewing those emergency orders that were adopted or published, and I can happily provide these to the committee if you haven't already seen them. And I could be wrong, but I don't see the fingerprinting regs were suspended; those were maintained. based on this document. I don't see that in there.
My understanding is there was some allowances and for that to be done after they got to work here or something. I'm not sure. I remember discussion of that. So I think we need to double check it and see how that might play into this and whether we would want to accept the fingerprinting that's done in another state and so there wouldn't be that delay.
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, I actually like to call on Ms. Meredith to respond to that.
Ms. Meredith, are you still tuned in?
Yes, I am still on the line. This is Sandra Meredith for the record, for the Department of Education and Early Development. Fingerprint regulations were not suspended, and that's primarily because there is a provision under 142010 that allows folks, individuals applying for certification, to just have to present their fingerprint card to us, and that gives the department 90 days to actually work with the Department of Public Safety to receive their criminal history report back. And during that time, they are still considered to be fully licensed in our state. So there's no penalty to the applicant or to the district as long as the fingerprint card is provided. I will say that we did work with the Department of Public Safety during the emergency orders where they allowed us to submit a name-based check on behalf of individuals that had difficulties actually getting their fingerprints rolled and the card put together for submission. That worked very well, and that gave the individual additional time to actually work with somebody to get their fingerprints rolled. With the suspension or with the removal of the emergency orders, that is no longer an option for folks that are applying for certification. But the other piece still provides that additional time when they initially apply for certification.
Follow-up question from Senator Hughes.
No, just a comment, and thank you for that clarification, Sandra. It was, I guess, the name-based check that I remember. I knew there was something different. Appreciate that clarification.
You're welcome.
And are there any other questions from the committee? Seeing no other questions, once again, we have scheduled SB 20 for additional invited and public testimony on Friday, March 19th. We'll now set SB 20 aside for further review. Next, we move on to Senate Bill 6. We'll take a brief at ease, just allow people to set up. All right, we're back on the record. Once again, Senate Education Committee, and we are going to address Senate Bill 6 relating to retirement incentive programs by Senator Kawasaki. And I believe we have Joe Hayes from Senator Kawasaki's staff. If you'd like to offer opening remarks and introduce the bill.
Through the chair, thank you, committee members, for the opportunity to introduce Senate Bill 6 for Senator Kawasaki. So I'll read the sponsor statement and then the sectional and then open for questions. Okay. So the sponsor statement, Senate Bill 6 will implement a temporary voluntary retirement incentive program to increase state savings by allowing public employees to retire up to 3 years early. Long-serving public employees are among the highest paid in the state. In many cases, pension paid to retiring employees will cost the state less money than their current salaries. Providing high-salary employees the option to retire early will save Alaska money through lower personnel costs. Senate Bill 6 can help prevent layoffs. The bill presents a method of cost cutting and payroll reduction without forcing anyone out of the workforce before they're ready to retire. This gives the state of Alaska the opportunity to reduce operating costs by opening vacancies that enables the placement of more junior employees. Retirement incentive programs are regularly used in the private sector to efficiently control personnel costs through market incentives rather than heavy-handed layoffs. Retirement incentive programs have been used on a temporary basis 3 times in Alaska's history and was last proposed in 2004. In 1986, Senator Jim Duncan estimated savings at approximately $25 million. A legislative audit of the 1989 retirement incentive program demonstrated a savings of $22.9 million with nearly 1,764 individual participants. In 1996, Representative McGuire calculated the state gained $41 million in savings through identical legislation. So Senate Bill 6 is an innovative policy option for state agencies, municipalities, and school districts to consider as a means to reduce payroll without layoffs. Mr. Chair, I'll go through the sectional.
Thank you.
Okay, so Section 1 defines the purpose and intent of the bill to make retirement incentive programs temporarily available to state agencies, municipalities, and school districts. It includes the intent for state agencies to adopt authorized retirement incentive programs to adopt an accompanying policy to prohibit hiring of new employees. Section 2 would allow public employees, including the University of Alaska, to elect to adopt a retirement incentive program under the bill. The employer may limit the program to specific components, job classifications, geographic locations, or a combination of the three. It specifies the Commissioner of Administration or the Commissioner's designee has the sole authority to approve or deny an employee's retirement incentive application. An employer adopting a retirement incentive shall propose the program to be to the administrator to approve if it meets the requirements set forth under Section 9 of this bill. And Section 9 establishes the requirements of any retirement incentive program proposed by a public employer to 1. Designate job classification and specific budget and administrative components of employees eligible to participate, and 2. For each participating employee, the employer must reimburse the defined benefit retirement plan within 3 years after the end of the fiscal year in which the employee retires. The reimbursement must be equal to an amount that is the difference between the benefits the retirement incentive program participant receives and the credit and the benefits the participant would have received without the credit, less the amount the participant has paid on the indebtedness provided later in this section. The reimbursement agreement requires the employer's contribution must be given priority over other financial obligations. An employer adopting a RIP may request the administrator to establish one or more application periods open to at least one eligible employee. The RIP application period must be at least 30 days and at most 60 days in duration. The retirement incentive program application period may only be established between 30 days after the program is established and no later than June 30, 2024. An administrator may allow an employee to retire early under the RIP no later than 6 months after the last day of the application period or on a date set by the RIP as the date employees are eligible to retire early, whichever is earlier. It establishes a RIP eligibility requirements for an employee. The employee is vested in the defined benefit retirement plan in PERS and TERS. The employee has credit for service under tiers 1, 2, or 3. The employee is at least 50 years of age and has at least 17 years of credit service as a peace officer or firefighter, or at least 20 years of credit service at any other public agency. 4. The employee is qualified to retire under the defined benefit plan after receipt of the approved early retirement credit. 5. An employee of a state agency satisfies the requirement under Section 3 and 6, the savings and personnel and personal service costs for the participating employee's position will exceed the cost to the employer for that vacating position within 3 years after the employee is appointed to retirement. So it sets the level of indebtedness for retirement incentive participants. For TERS members, participants pay 25.95% of the year's annual compensation for the school year, or the calculated school year compensation if they work a partial year, plus a share of the administrative costs. The indebtedness for peace officers and firefighters is 22.5% and 20.25% for all other PERS members. for any rep participant, annual or personal leave may be applied toward indebtedness. Pension benefits shall be reduced by an actuarial adjustment if the participant has not paid the indebtedness at the time of retirement. It provides a credit of 3 years of service to be given to an employee participating in the program. The three-year credit must be applied in order of priority until the credit is met. To meet the age of service required for normal retirement eligibility, to meet the age required for early retirement, to reduce the actuarial adjustment required for early retirement, as years of accredited services for calculating benefits. Section 3 requires interested eligible state employees must be employed for at least 12 months prior to application to an approved RIP. It prohibits the governor, lieutenant governor, commissioners, deputy commissioners, or assistant commissioners from participating in a RIP. Section 4 authorizes University of Alaska employees who are members of TERS or PERS or TERS may participate in a RIP under the appropriate requirements for their defined benefit retirement program established under this bill. Section 5 allows PERS or TERS members to receive a credit for service while employed in a political or public organization prior to their organization's participation in PERS or TERS. The credit may be applied to determine the amount of retirement benefits that employees receive. Section 6 allows the Commissioner of Administration to recover a delinquency owed to the state by an employer, provides the delinquency may be recovered by withholding money owed to the employer equal to or less than the amount of the delinquency, and by bringing action against the employer. Section 7 allows an administrator to close an adopted RIP to new applicants if it has been determined that the increase in the number of participants will have a significant negative effect on the actuarial soundness of PERS or TERS. Section 8, it requires an employee to participate in a RIP that is reemployed under PERS or TERS or judicial retirement system to forfeit the incentive credit received or due as established under Section 2. The employee must also incur the indebtedness to the reemployment defined benefit plan at 110% of the amount received solely as a result in participating in a RIP, including health insurance premium costs. The administrator shall apply the amount the employee paid in the indebtedness under Section 2 as a credit toward the member's reemployment indebtedness, interest on that reemployment indebtedness accrued from the date of employment until the date the individual is appointed to retirement, and accept an actuarial adjustment to future benefits or until the employee repays the indebtedness in full. The rate of interest is established by the Alaska Retirement Management Board. It prohibits a state agency or the University of Alaska from employing or contracting an individual who retired under a RIP for a period of 3 years. It establishes several exceptions for the University of Alaska school districts and the legislative branch. Section 9 requires the director of the Office of Management and Budget to determine if each RIP adopted will reduce net operating costs for the state agency for a five-year period beginning in July 1, 2021, and report the outcomes of the review to the administrator. Prohibits the administrator from approving a RIP unless the OMB determines the program is expected to reduce the agency's net operation costs. The state agency adopting a RIP shall cooperate with and provide information to the OMB to aid it with the preparation of the review and the annual report submitted to the legislature. It requires the OMB to submit to both legislative chambers an annual report of established RIPs beginning in January 15, 2022 through January 15, 2025. Assess the requirements for those annual reports so that the legislature can evaluate the RIP, their impacts on PERS and TERS, and their economic impact to employing agencies. Section 10 provides that the employee does not have a vested or contractual right to a benefit under this bill until an agreement is executed with the administrator that authorizes the employee to participate in the RIP. It allows the legislature to change a RIP as it relates to employees for whom an agreement has been executed. Section 11 allows the commissioner to adopt regulations to implement and interpret the act. Section 12 provides definitions of administrator, employee, OMB, PERS, TERS, public organizations, and state agencies for the purposes of this act established under this bill. Section 13 prohibits Section 1 through 12 from impairing the benefits of a person appointed to retirement under PERS and TERS before the effective date of the bill. Section 14, Section 1 through 12 applies to contracts made on or after the effective date. Section 15 repeals Sections 1 through 12 on July 1, 2024. And Section 16 enacts the bill immediately under AS 0110-070C.
Thank you, Mr. Hayes.
With that, Mr. Chairman, I'm open for questions.
Question from Senator Begich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a clarification. Just when you're reading Section 10, sometimes the record becomes the record that we use in lawsuits. And you said whom an agreement has been executed. I think you meant to say whom an agreement has not been executed.
Through the chair, Senator Begich, thank you.
I just want to clarify that.
Which section was that again?
That's Section 10. Just the very last line
yes.
And I'd be remiss, Mr. Chairman, if I didn't point out that I'm confused as to how to address Mr. Hayes because he's a former representative. And so I want to say Representative Hayes, but whatever the will of the chair is, I'll use.
Representative Hayes would be just fine.
I have a question on Section 8. May I?
Please, Senator Begich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Hayes. In Section 8, I just wanted to be sure I fully understand. Section 8 really is to keep people from taking advantage of the system and then coming right back in immediately after executing an RIP and then taking advantage of the system by jumping right back into the system. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Begich, you are correct, yes.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Are there any other questions before the committee? Senator Hughes?
Well, just on that point, I know we had a bill, I think it might have even been Senator Michiki's, I'm not sure, where we were allowing retired teachers to come back. And so I'm not sure, I understand what Senator Begich was just bringing up, but in some places, if there's a shortage, I'm wondering if it ever still would make sense. So that's just a comment. But my question is actually in regard to in Section 2, the requirement the employee be at least 50 years old, and if this is truly something where there could be a net cost savings, I'm just wondering about why have an age limit, because if you have somebody that started employment with the state in their 20s, they could meet that 17 years of credited service. Actually, I think it was 15 years of credit service I saw in the bill and 20 years for any other public agency. So you could have somebody at a younger age where it'd be a cost savings. It's a cost savings. So I know I have a son-in-law that got to take opportunity to retire early from the military for that reason. It was a cost savings. So, and he wasn't even 40 yet at the time, so because he started right after high school. So you have any comment as far as that goes, that age and why you put age 50 in there?
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, you know, I guess I'm not sure how many state employees through the requirements needed to become a state employee would be hired at 18, generally without a degree. I guess I don't really know of many state employees who wouldn't need the bare minimum of some type of formal education. We will review that, but I'm not sure how many state employees would fall under 50. But we will take a look at that, Senator Hughes.
And follow up, because you could have someone start at age 25 with a master's degree, and you still, in 17 years, they're not 50. So that's my point. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Hughes. Another question from Senator Begich.
A clarification again, Mr. Chairman. The bill that was proposed by Senator Michikian passed and became a law, which does allow teachers, specifically excluded them from coming back into the retirement system. That was a provision that we brought up in the thing. So that wouldn't, there are exceptions under Section 8, I'd noted, and I just read the section, and those are for like substitute teaching and things like that. So you're right that there's the emergency, the bill that the retirement incentive bill, I think that, you remember the bill, would not be affected by this effectively.
Thank you, Senator Begich. Senator Michiki.
Yeah, I just got to tell you that you know, we talk about the financial benefits to the state. Those have been questionable on the three or four RIPs we passed in the past, but we are sort of at this perfect storm of not being able to fill teaching positions today, which is why we passed the rehire bill, which was a great bill. Oh, Senator Stevens left. I was going to. But I'm kind of struggling. I mean, the economic benefits are questionable. I don't know if you read the Legislative Research Services report. There's been mixed reviews. And when you look at how some of the calculations were done, in many cases, there was actually a cost to the state. I don't want to hammer the bill because I actually fundamentally understand the economic value of giving an incentive to a very highly compensated 30-year teacher and replacing them with a much lower cost other teacher. But right now, I think we're in sort of dire straits on keeping teaching positions filled. So it worries me. So I'll leave it at that. I don't even really need an answer, but I appreciate the idea, and maybe there'll be a point where this is more beneficial, but right now I'm worried about it.
Thank you, Senator Michicki. Representative Hayes, did you have a comment on that?
And through the chair, I represent Senator Michicki. what Senator Kawasaki viewed this bill as is a win-win. It's an opt-in bill versus an opt-out. So any municipality, district, school district, university, they would decide if this would work for them. So the state is not saying that you have to do a rep. If that district felt that they could produce cost savings, they would then proceed into doing this type of situation. So this is not an opt-in, it's an opt-out. And the senator is looking at this as a morale booster also because of the amount of layoffs and so forth that the state has been doing as far as reducing budgets. Seems like this is a better way to have folks walk away in a different manner and to retain the morale in certain areas and certain segments of the state. So
thank you for your comments. With no more questions from the committee, we can move on to invited testimony from Deputy Director Doug Wolliver with the Alaska Court System. Director Wolliver, if you'd like to state your name and affiliation for the record and begin your comments.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Doug Wolliver, Deputy Administrative Director for the Alaska Court System. The court doesn't take a position on this bill, but I was asked to come and testify about a RIP program that the court developed in 2016. We were looking at that time to reduce personnel costs. We had, Mr. Hayes mentioned and Senator Michicki mentioned, longtime employees cost a lot more in a position than newer employees are. So we don't have the authority in the court without amending statutes to have an early retirement program such as this. All we could do is incentivize people who are already eligible to retire to go ahead and retire. The program we adopted had, you had to have been eligible to retire for at least 3 years. You had to have been an employee of the court system for at least 10 years. And you had to agree to retire by August 31st of 2016. That's so that you could make your commitment on by June 30th, so it's in that we get the savings in the fiscal year we were looking for. We had, there were just 28 people in the courts who were eligible for that. And 16 of them opted to do the retirement program, and the incentive was 3 months' salary. So they were paid 3 months' salary. They retired, and our net savings was from thereafter was about $680,000 a year, which isn't big in terms of PERS and TERS, but in terms of the court system's budget, $680,000, when you're looking to cut personnel costs, was a real help to us at the time. And as Mr. Hayes mentioned, it was a morale booster for a lot of them. We were able to say goodbye to some long-term employees who are very good, but on very good terms. And we saved a lot of money, and at least by our standards, and it worked well. It's a different kind of program, but it worked for us. And that's my testimony.
question from Senator Machicki.
Yeah, so this is education. I'm only looking at the bill from an educational standpoint. I'm not even talking about PERS. I'm just looking at the TERS impacts, right? So I feel differently about it in the PERS section. I think there's actually some practical benefits to considering that. But since someone from the court system happens to be here, the ageism aspect of this has been challenged in the past. So yours was based on qualification on years of service or something not related to someone's age. This bill seems to be more directed at age, and this is not judiciary either. But do you have concerns about that, or would you rather not respond on a legal aspect of the bill?
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, I think it would be best to turn to Ledge Legal for that. I will say, though, that retirement incentive programs are pretty common across the country, and I suspect that whatever the law is, it's well established. But they would be more schooled in that area than me.
Okay,
thank you.
Question from Senator Hughes.
And yes, we are the Education Committee, but I'm going to veer off just a tad too. Just a comment, because as I was reading the legislative research, the one program that was enacted in 1989, part of it was to mitigate the social hardship of layoffs. And so they weren't actually replacing those positions. And so I just think as lawmakers, we ought to think about that. We know that we've seen reports that are per capita number of state employees is pretty high. Of course, we have a very unique state, and we provide a lot of services in parts of our state that wouldn't happen in another state, so it's not real, you can't really compare. But it might be something to consider if a position would remain vacant to offer this kind of a program, so that the position would become vacant sooner if we decide to downsize in some area. So I just throw that out. I was just realizing that could be a benefit that might be helpful to the state. Thank you.
All right. With no other questions before the committee, I see we have Jim Puckett with the Department of Retirement and Benefits online. Mr. Puckett, are you out there?
Yes, this is Jim Puckett. I'm available for any questions.
And that's what I thought. I just want to make sure that you did not have testimony to provide. And then also Carolyn Schultz with the OMB, a policy analyst, or were you just available for questions?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Yes, for the record, this is Caroline Schultz with the Office of Management and Budget, and I am available for questions.
A question for Mr. Puckett from Senator Machicki.
Mr. Puckett, is there a legal ability if the sponsor was so inclined to remove the TERS section of this bill and let it move forward with a PERS section? And I'm not saying that this committee supports it moving forward. I'm just curious. We do not. I'm going to throw it out there as kind of a Senator Machicki factual statement, but this would not work for TERS right now. Is it legal to make a RIP out or to make it an option for PERS employees and not TERS?
And Mr. Puckett, if you'd please state your name and affiliation again, just to get yourself on the record.
Yes, this is Jim Puckett. I'm the Deputy Director for the Division of Retirement and Benefits, and through the chair to Senator Machicki. They are two separate retirement systems, so a bill can be developed that would only be for PERS and not include TERS. There would be nothing wrong about that legally.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Director Puckett. With, I'm sorry, Mr. Hayes, did you have a comment?
Through the chair, Senator Machicki. Unfortunately, we have a superintendent from Sitka who they're actually doing a RIP program right now. He's on vacation and cannot make it to the hearing today to present for the Sitka school district. But at some point, we would like to have him come and testify.
Thank you. Okay. And with no other questions from the committee, thank you for your time and your presentations. And we will now set SB6 aside. Our next meeting is Wednesday, March 17th at 9 a.m. Is there any other business before the committee? Seeing none, we are adjourned at 10:12.